It's no secret that pop culture gives marketers and their agency partners an infinite library of inspiration. But very few pieces of work break through so powerfully that they travel across borders, shape culture, and win both commercially and creatively. Recently, though, Let There Be Cake by KFC Thailand has done exactly that. This work has been cleaning up at awards, from a golden film at Cannes to wins at The One Show, The Lurie's, and several others. But more importantly, it won where it matters most, with customers at home in Thailand.
You've got to give yourself, and this is where the work really did connect. And that work connected because not because it looked different, but also because it felt true. And I say, as marketing leaders, we sometimes often underestimate. You have to give yourself license to play. Okay, so this is a birthday brief, right? These guys have come to me with an idea that is about creating this cake apocalypse. And then at the end, there's chicken. Now, I mean, that's playing. You're playing with the brand there. But that's where leadership really matters, because I could have easily said, guys, come on, man. You know, you got to show 40th birthday, big, make it big, let everyone know. But as a leader, I knew that that doesn't matter. So we've got to give ourselves a license to play. And I think when that happened, when we heard the idea, our role became very, very clear, which is as marketers, we had to get out of the way.
Suhail Limbada, the Chief Marketing Officer of KFC Thailand, joined us to explore why the work resonates so deeply and how you know when you've landed on a big idea that has the power to move people, culture, and business.
How do I know, you know, when the market is ready for us to push the boundaries, I would say? I get a lot of that from my social media feeds. How people interact with us in social media. If I do something risky, it's met with playfulness, as opposed to, hey, what are you doing? Come on, that's not your space, you know? And there's a willingness for people to play with us, which tells me that we've earned the right to have a bit of fun. We've earned that reputation. So I think it's a combination of using your judgment, knowing when to play, when not to play.
Suhail explains why in his team, risk isn't just allowed, but expected. Why failure, in his words, is fertile ground for braver, more distinct, and more courageous work.
As I told you, my philosophy is it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. Not recklessly, but courageously. You know, I've often spoken about the need for us to signal that risk is not, it's not allowed in our work. It's expected. I expect my creatives to take risks. If you come to me with a safe idea, it's dead.
If you found this conversation useful, please share this episode with your network. The more the community grows, the more we're able to bring insightful industry leaders to share their real stories, their lessons, and sometimes their secret sauce. My name is Monge Zimtati, and this is The Lead Creative.
Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe.
So, Hel, thanks so much for making time to talk to us on The Lead Creative. I know it's close to 6 o'clock where you are. It's 12 o'clock where I am. It's very interesting that, of course, you're on the other side of the world, and you've been able to make the time. So I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mizzy. I think thanks for having me. I've heard a lot about you. I've heard a lot about what you do in the industry, and like I'm just grateful to be able to be a part of it.
Thank you. So Hel, to start off, you've gone from the land of braai and pap, as it were, to a country where even the street food is a uniquely different experience from anywhere else in the world.
At what point did you feel like you understand Thai culture well enough to mirror it back to itself in a meaningful way as a marketer?
Ah, man, I don't think I'll ever get there, frankly speaking. I can just do my best. I think, and the reason I say that is moving from South Africa to Thailand, two countries that I suppose couldn't be more different in pace, in history, in consumer behavior, even emotional codes. It's often forced me to rethink everything that I know of culture and everything that I appreciate of culture. And so to answer the question as to, you know, at what point do I believe, you know, I can sort of mirror that in the work that we do. The culture here is so deep. I don't think I'll ever get to that point. But I do believe that after 4 years, I'm in a position where we're reflecting the culture, we're reflecting the work in a way that's meaningful for Thai people. When I came in, it was an interesting journey because I'm a Westerner. I've come from the other side of the world, and I tried to make work that I felt was right, but actually it fundamentally didn't resonate with people here. And the reason is because I developed work with the lens of a non-Thai person. And it took a few years of failures and and appreciating what truly Thai culture is for me to start behaving as a leader in a way that developed work that truly meant something to Thai people. And so I think that journey will ever be evolving, no matter where I go, actually, not just in Thailand. It will take me a while to get to a point where I can confidently say, unless I come back to South Africa, because then, of course, I can say, hey, I'm from here. But otherwise, the journey is ever evolving, Mongezi. That's my point. Yeah.
An interesting thing is that as a marketer, I suppose you pride yourself on understanding people, on understanding the culture, on understanding the space that you've been. And to your point, you've only been there for 4 years. You've been in South Africa for most of your life, you know, your whole life prior to that. And you understood the culture, you understood the people. What is it that you feel that as a marketer, you had to almost relearn, because now you are learning a completely different culture, even with the strong fundamentals that you have as a seasoned marketer, and also the strong fundamentals of the brand being KFC that you represent? What is it that you almost had to, that you had to rethink, relearn?
Yeah. Yeah. I had to relearn everything, Mongezi. Like it's been a journey, man. I can tell you, because these countries are so fundamentally different. And to be honest with you, that's why I actually took the job. I took the job because the steeper the learning curve, the better it is for me personally. And so coming into a market that was so different, you know, like I said, in pace, in consumer behavior, emotional codes, humor, it forced me to reset everything that I know. So if I have to answer your question, I had to unlearn culture to relearn culture. And as a leader, I couldn't lead with my assumptions, because my assumptions were not Thai assumptions. So I had to arrive in the market with curiosity. I was very humble. I had to be humbled a few times when the work failed. And I had to have the willingness to be wrong. And in order to be successful, in terms of what I had to do, I really had to start earning the trust from my own team. That's quite critical. So when I joined, I made a conscious effort to show them that I wasn't there to impose my perspective or another market's perspective on creativity. I genuinely showed up wanting to learn, you know, how do Thai people think? What do they value? What do they find funny? What do they find respectful? And what I found is when the Thai team saw me listening, truly listening to them and appreciating their culture, and not just extracting it, I think that's when the trust started happening. And that trust then generated bravery and courage. So one of my core beliefs is to serve the people and not serve my ego, not serve my ego. Because I think the biggest barrier to really bold creativity is leaders who want to be right rather than relevant. It's quite a thing. It's quite a thing, you know, because you want to be right. Naturally, you want to be the one that says, hey, you know, I know what I'm doing. But actually, in many instances, when we needed to be relevant, I was actually wrong. I didn't even know. I had no idea, but I had to trust my team. So when you center your work around culture and people and not personal preference, you then earn that legitimacy to really push the work further. So, you know, I think that's part and parcel of what I've had to do. And then I'd say going into a new culture, I'm not sure how much you know about Thailand, but Thai there's something called sabai sabai, right? Which is just, you know, like just it's status quo. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy the day. There's no real desire to rock the boat, to take risks, to push the boundaries. And I was a CMO coming in to do exactly that. That was literally my job. So my job in a way was to go against the culture. And so part of earning the right to push bold creative work was to create a risk-taking environment or a risk-taking culture. And my personal philosophy for many years, for people who know me, I've always known that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. I've lived that. I've lived that daily. In fact, it's a running joke now in my team that in every single creative brief, the ask is get Suhail fired. Because that's actually what I ask for. That's what I expect. Because that mindset stretches the mind. It stretches the boundaries. It actually gives the team the oxygen to take risks, you know? It removes that fear. And so to create that, I think through, you know, humility, trust, understanding the culture, and then finally delivering a willingness to play on the edges has been the journey of a lifetime for me in Thailand.
You talk about brave work a lot. You've also mentioned instances when work doesn't land. I want to stick to this idea of brave work because around the world, brands everywhere say they want brave, courageous, creative work, but very few of them actually invest in brave creative work. When they do invest in brave creative work, sometimes it's so brave, so creative, so bold that it even the marketers then push back on that creative work. Why does it matter earning that one, that right to create that bold creative work? And what changes in the team once the business has earned that right?
I think why does it matter is because why are we in business? We are in business to take our brands forward, to grow our brands. And I think there was a fantastic talk at Cannes, not this year, but the previous year. It was called The Extraordinary Cost of Dull, which is system one that have actually, you know, in the past, creativity was always an opinion. It was opinion-based. Hey, you do creative work, but, you know, it doesn't do anything. There's no data behind it, you know. But, hey, look at my performance work. Look at the performance marketing. Yeah, I spend this much. I get this much. Where's your creative numbers? Well, I think system one has done that. And they have consistently shown us that bold creative work is four times more effective than average or dull work. Or if I have to put it in another way, it costs you four times more to have the same impact as creative work. So I think for me, it's very, very clear that there is a genuine commercial benefit in driving creativity. There is absolutely no doubt the brands that are winning today within my category, within quick service restaurants, I'll tell you, that there are brands like Chili's in the US, they have leaned into creativity over the last, I would say, a year and a half, and they are growing at 30%+ while their competitors are declining. What's the difference between like the rest of the category and Chili's? Is they've really leaned on creativity and putting the brand at the heart of culture. That's it. It's as simple as that. So the why for me, there is no doubt if anybody comes to debate with me about creativity and like the commercial impact of creativity, I will spend a day with them talking them through the power of creativity. And I think what does it do in terms of the team? I think it's very, very clear that mindset, it really stretches the art of the possible. Because all of a sudden, you see people asking, what if? Hey, what if we did this? The World Cup is coming up, and I'm not saying I'm going to do this, Mongez, but what if we hijack the World Cup, right? As opposed to people who didn't believe in creativity, they would not even ask that question. But it opens up doors to the possible. You know, it opens up to thinking that doesn't delegate itself to risk, but rather it delegates itself to a chance. And I think that is exciting. That is brave. That is honest. That is culturally honest, you know, and genuinely transformative. Ultimately, it creates an environment where whatever people do on a daily basis actually has a chance of genuine transformation versus, let's play it safe. You know, we might get there, we might not get there. But hey, you know what? We tried our best. I personally, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for spending time in the average space. If I'm going to spend my time and energy, it's got to transform. It's got to push the boundaries. It's got to be world class. So I think there's a commercial benefit to it. And the environment that it creates is actually a fun environment, because all of us as marketers, when we were growing up to become marketers, we thought about the brands that inspired us, and we want to do that. You didn't like think, hey, I want to do the average performance marketing stuff with digital banners, and that's how I want to spend my life. No offense to those people, but we want to push the boundaries. And so it creates this environment where teams are happy, teams are fun, teams are learning. Because even when you fail, you learn. You're learning a lot.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
I want to go back to earning that right, because you've also said you earn the right to do that. You've also mentioned earlier that if you weren't familiar with the culture, you didn't know the culture well enough, you had to sort of almost sit and learn at the feet of said culture to understand it so that you could mirror it back to itself in a way that's kind of meaningful and comes out in the work. How do you know when you've earned the right to do that boundary pushing work? Or do you just keep pushing boundaries, and at some point the response from the market kind of tells you that you've earned the rights?
I think you have to gain the credibility to push the boundaries. And the reason why I say that is because when you fail, you want people to forgive you. When you have the credibility, when you have the reputation of pushing boundaries and taking risks, naturally people will say, hey, that brand, they always do that. You know, they always push the boundaries. And so you actually do learn that you're gaining the permission to fail. And that allows you naturally to actually get that credibility. I think in Thailand, how do I know? You know, when the market is ready for us to push the boundaries, I would say. I get a lot of that from my social media feeds. How people interact with us in social media. If I do something risky, it's met with playfulness. As opposed to, hey, what are you doing? Come on, that's not your space, you know? And there's a willingness for people to play with us, which tells me that we've earned the right to have a bit of fun. We've earned that reputation. So I think it's a combination of using your judgment, knowing when to play, when not to play. There are certain times when you really shouldn't push the boundaries. But at the same time, when your fans are literally telling you they wanna have more fun on social media, that's when you know, man. That's when you know you're doing something right.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that leads us nicely into the multi-award winning Let There Be Cake work, because we started seeing that, or at least I started seeing that on my timeline in South Africa long before Cannes itself. And it was odd because, to your point, social media tells you when something, when you're doing something right, but also social media tends to be very localized in what it shows you, regional than what it shows you. And this work, for me, really crossed the, you know, crossed boundaries. It kind of went beyond where it was created into other parts of the world globally, and it resonated because I was seeing it on timelines in South Africa before it went on to win as much as it did at Cannes. And congratulations, by the way, on that, because I think that's the first place to start. So with this work, which is so distinct, bold, and beautifully crafted, yet also in very many ways unmistakably KFC, and in a previous conversation that we had, another creative director said, also unmistakably Thai, as much as it's also unmistakably KFC. I think that's one of those things. I mean, and this is not a person who is Thai, right? But you could see the culture almost mirrored, if I could use that word again. Why is distinctiveness so important for brands today, especially when brands in very many categories can be interchangeable?
Yeah. I mean, I think when we talk about distinctiveness, I think I always come back, especially in the case of, for example, cake, I always come back to this. It's a very simple thing. It all begins with the idea. Before we can even talk about the craft, the culture, the channels, the formats, the director, or, you know, the creative, or whatever, is the idea genuinely big? It's amazing how when brands are pursuing distinctiveness, they look at the clothing of the idea, but they don't actually look at the idea itself. So when I'm sitting in a creative revert, that's the very first question I'm asking myself. Is this idea genuinely big? Is this idea big enough to move culture? Is this idea big enough to win the attention of, you know, people? Is it big enough to justify the ambition in the brief? Like, does it meet the actual requirements of the brief? Like, our briefs are always, we want to go bold, we want to go crazy. Because if the idea isn't big, the execution naturally is just, it's noise. That's it. And I think when it comes to distinctiveness, to your question, it's, you know, beyond the idea, there is a deeper truth for me, which is, distinctiveness without brand truth eventually wears thin. So if you want to be consistently distinctive, you can choose as a brand to be loud, funny, provocative, weird. But if the work isn't anchored in what the brand really stands for, the impact of that fades fairly quickly. There are a number of global brands that have done that. Like, if with humility, I will reference a brand within our category, which is Burger King. For many years, you would have looked at their work, which was wildly distinctive. You know, it was superb craft. Like, if you remember the molded, you know, the molded burger, molded, so clever, iconic, you know. And I'm not taking anything away from the work itself. But there were moments when I wondered whether the brand truth had slipped away from the idea of being distinctive. And it's not unique to Burger King, and I'm not slating Burger King in any form. This happens to all of us. This even happened to KFC. There was a time when our business was making work that was truly distinctive, like it was hyper distinctive, but it didn't say anything about the brand. There are brands like Pepsi, there's Diesel, there are tech brands that have fundamentally, mistaken this idea of distinctiveness for emotional storytelling. I think distinctiveness gets attention, but for me, storytelling rooted in the truth of the brand is what creates that longevity. That's why I think cake really worked the way, why it won so much. It wasn't just distinctive to be different. It was distinctive because the story, the idea demanded it to be distinct. The idea tapped into a very deeply Thai truth. It was this like idea of the emotional weight of gifting, the cultural importance of celebrations, and how food becomes a love language in the market. And then everything else around it, the humor, the surrealism of it was all KFC. But it was a moment of joy rooted in human connection through our food. That's what it was about. And we've done a number of pieces of work in Thailand that sort of tap into this. But I really, really feel strongly about this. And when you ask me about distinctiveness, that it has to be rooted in a brand truth. Okay, it's got to be. Otherwise, you are just being different for the sake of being different. And that's not going to last long.
How do you ensure, though, that boldness is rooted in that brand truth, that it's grounded in the identity of the brand? Because, again, so I want to go back to my outsider's perspective or knowledge or understanding of KFC and how I've experienced KFC. I suppose, you know, even from childhood, I remember KFC being a moment that brings a family together. It was always marketed as that, except for the burgers or something that is very individual, where it's like, you know, it's a grab and go. But most of it has been really about bringing the family together, having a shared moment, having a shared meal. And in fact, I'm part of a team that does the fast food report and the Township CX report, where we poll over 1,000 people for each report, close to 2,000 people, asking them different questions. And I think KFC comes out as this is, especially in low-income homes, it's something that we share as a family. We buy it on a Friday to share together, to share as a family. So in my outsider's context, I've always experienced it as a shared family meal. And then comes this work that is widely known as Let There Be Cake, and you refer to it as cake, as I've picked up. It then becomes this almost, it almost felt to me like it picks up on what's happening in culture today, what's happening in Is It Cake, the Netflix show today, in that sort of cultural, a cultural moment that is more sort of common today, kind of thing. Pop culture is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah,
picks up on pop culture, whereas I've always experienced a brand as being a family-oriented brand. So how do you ensure that this boldness lives up to, you know, the brand standards and how the brand truly is experienced by people?
Yeah, I think it's part of our journey, to be fair. Like you say, like we have had a very deep history with the bucket, right? The bucket is what has created this emotional connection for many, many millions of people, that every single brand tracker that KFC has across the world talks about these memories rooted in family. And that's fantastic. It really means a lot to us. We also want to push the brand beyond that. We want to put the brand in spaces that are more relevant today. Because if I look at the new generations, if I look at how these generations are growing up, perhaps they're not having that Friday night occasion that you mentioned, or a Sunday, or whatever the day may be. And in Thailand specifically, we're seeing that the brand has to go beyond that traditional family occasion. And that's why this brief was part of our 40th birthday celebrations. It was about, the brief was very, very simple. We don't want a typical birthday celebration. Literally, that was it. Like, we don't want a typical birthday ad, because frankly, consumers don't care about brand birthdays as much as us marketers like to think, hey, it's my 40th birthday, so exciting. Consumers don't care. So we wanted to, that was the ask of Bananas and the director, is to, you know, celebrate our birthday in a non-traditional way. And when this idea came about, it was rooted in pop culture. It came off the back of people creating cakes of everyday real things, and then you realize, oh, it's cake. And the creative thought was, hey, why don't we create a whole world of cake, and then at the end, the chicken is actually real. And we were like, wow, that is crazy. But let's do it. Right? That's where we were. So how to bring it to life is you've got to give yourself, and this is where the work really did connect. And that work connected because not because it looked different, but also because it felt true. And I say, as marketing leaders, we sometimes often underestimate, you have to give yourself license to play. Okay, so, and I'll just sit with that. You have to give your license. So this is a birthday brief, right? These guys have come to me with an idea that is about creating this cake apocalypse. And then at the end, there's chicken. Now, I mean, that's playing. You're playing with the brand there. But that's where leadership really matters, because I could have easily said, guys, come on, man. You know, you got a show, 40th birthday, big, make it big, let everyone know. But as a leader, I knew that that doesn't matter. So we've got to give ourselves a license to play. And I think when that happened, when we heard the idea, our role became very, very clear, which is as marketers, we had to get out of the way. And I believe that, you know, we need to let creatives be creative, give them the oxygen, give them the things, the tools to play with, and take away the fear instead of adding to it. So as the idea, because, man, you should have been there. As we started talking about this idea, it was getting crazier and crazier. Like, oh, there'll be a bike. It will have cake in it. The guy will cut his PlayStation. It's like, what are we doing here? But instead of like saying, guys, okay, let's tone it down, we were like, no, let's go crazier. So we added oxygen to it, right? We added oxygen. And as I told you, my philosophy is it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. Not recklessly, but courageously. You know, I've often spoken about the need for us to signal that risk is not allowed in our work. It's expected. I expect my creatives to take risks. If you come to me with a safe idea, it's dead. So when we made cake, for us, distinctiveness, you know, without that story would have been a gimmick. If chicken wasn't the hero at the end of the day, it would have been a gimmick, because it would have made an ad about a pop culture thing and it would have meant nothing. And it would have gone forgotten. But the brand truth was there, is that the chicken is real and the chicken is the hero. And that's why we're celebrating 40 years with chicken. So for me, a big idea, cultural storytelling, and a risk embracing environment, when those come together, and people will create work, creatives will create magic, and people will remember them. So, yeah.
How do you maintain that momentum after such big sort of global wins for the work? And by that, I mean both creatively and commercially. How do you make sure that you at least stay in people's minds slightly longer?
I think it's, you've got to have a hunger, because it's not easy. You've got to have a hunger to really want that boundary pushing work. And that, again, as a leader, you have to create that culture of hunger internally first. So when we won at Cannes, naturally my first reaction was, okay, what are we winning next? And my team was like, ah, come on, man. We just won. Give us a break, you know? But if you look at, anything that is world-class, I mean, I'll move away from our category. I'll actually even move away from the entire principle. Look at athletes. Athletes train 90% of the time to achieve something, and sometimes they'll win, sometimes they'll lose. If you look at Usain Bolt, trained 4 years, yeah, for 10 seconds. Yeah. And at the end of those 10 seconds, broke a world record. And he's like, I'm going to break it again. And it starts with hunger. If you look at Cristiano Ronaldo, the guy is 40. He's still winning everything and anything. It comes from a real place of hunger. So as a leader, I've had to really drive that home, is that we won. What did we learn? What did we learn from that experience of winning? What were the things that made us win? How did you feel when you won? Do you want to feel it again? It's having those conversations as opposed to going into a comfortable zone where you say, you know what, I've made it. I won at Cannes. There's nothing left to win. Like, you know, and it's not easy because, honestly speaking, to win at that level is very, very hard work. And it requires a culture and a system. It can't be through one individual. And I'd like to think at KFC Thailand, we've created that culture where all of us naturally wake up wanting to push the boundaries. So as an example, practical example, when we sit in creative reverts now and the work is safe, I don't even have to say it. My team will be like, ah, come on, guys. This is not us. You know, you create that persona that this is not us.
Yes.
Which is also powerful. It's like, no, this is not us. Now we are there. You know, we push the boundary. And I think that is what keeps the momentum going. You won't get it right, obviously. We won't win at Cannes all the time. But I think that that elevated ambition, it's contagious. It really is. Because anybody who's part of the brand, whether you're on the client side, whether you're on the agency side, you know, you want to be there. And I think that's when the work naturally starts pushing up.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Many heritage brands, though, really struggle to stay relevant as challengers come in, push harder, become more distinctive, become more courageous, because sometimes some challenger brands tend to push the needle slightly more than heritage brands, or even call it legacy brands. Why do you think resonance becomes harder to maintain, especially over time? And how have you at KFC maintained it meaningfully by increasing also, I guess, you know, customer engagement? Because there are all these constraints that you're faced with as a marketer, all these budgetary constraints, time, all of these things that you kind of have to face and balance. You mentioned performance marketing earlier. So there are all these things that you need to balance, but at the same time, you also need to maintain that resonance, that relevance. Why do heritage brands tend to struggle at times to do that?
I think in today's world, if I can simply answer that question, is heritage brands sometimes you get caught up with the trend, and you wanna jump in on the trend, and sometimes you forget who you are along the way. Because I think there's so much that the consumer today is exposed to, you know, on social media, so many different things. You as a marketer, even, you're probably scrolling, you know, and you're like, ah, I want to do this or I want to do that, you know. And you tend to get caught up in the idea of being trendy versus being a classic. And I'm not saying either one is right. But you are who you are. And if you're a strong brand, I think you have something way more powerful than someone who is trying to be on trend, which is you have deeply rooted emotional codes with consumers. And you should leverage that. And so instead of trying to spend time jumping on every single trend, It's about understanding, marketers should understand who they truly are. Mangesia, I can tell you, if I took 100 marketers from 100 brands today, let's say brand managers, and I asked them, explain to me your brand positioning in one sentence. I think, honestly speaking, a lot of them would struggle with articulating what their brand stands for. And I think that talks to the fact that we are trying to be everything to everybody, everywhere. So it's to answer your question, I think brands that are heritage brands need to have discipline. The discipline of being true to who you are, the discipline of truly understanding what you stand for in the hearts and minds of consumers, and truly, truly knowing what your role is in culture. I think if you have that discipline, your brand will grow. You don't have to worry about being on a trend or going viral, whatever, because people know who you are. In fact, we don't give consumers credit enough. Like at KFC, our taste is something that keeps people coming back. And we should focus on that versus trying to be everything everywhere for everyone. So heritage brands, I believe, are very powerfully positioned today, even with Gen Z consumers. I'll be honest with you. In fact, research tells you that Gen Z consumers are actually more inclined to go to heritage brands than ever before. It may not look like that on social media, but that's the reality. But if those heritage brands forget who they are, is game over. I honestly don't believe that the marketing teams of heritage brands should be trying to be anything but themselves. So my philosophy on that is be pretty clear. Don't forget who you are.
Something remarkable about this Let There Be Cake campaign, just to go back to it, because there's a lot about this. So we had Suhail, on the show alongside Kolisa Jeshana talking about some of the trends they spotted at Cannes, what led to award-winning work. And of course, Let There Be Cake came up as a result of that. But something remarkable about this campaign, in my view, is that it came from a new partnership with Bananas, or at least that's how it looks. It looks to me, at least. And yet it has the maturity and confidence that we usually see from long-standing relationships, because it's usually agencies and brands that have worked together for a long time that get each other so well that that you're able to just nail the brief and nail it so well that it resonates globally. Why do you think this partnership clicked so well and so quickly?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a new relationship. I'd say if there's one thing I've learned across markets, agencies, and different cultures, is that great creative partnerships are not built on process or, even duration of time. The relationship is entirely built on humanity. I mean, it sounds simple, but actually, before the roles and responsibilities of client and agency, scope of work, all of that stuff, we have to, as leaders, we have to recognize that we are human beings. And if you treat each other like humans first, everything else becomes easier. So even though this was a new partnership, from day one, we treat each other as equals, as equal human beings. It sounds simplistic. But actually, it is probably the most powerful thing that people forget, because there's this strange, in my view, outdated dynamic in our industry where the client is positioned as the power holder simply because the client controls the budget. And to be honest with you, that is absolute nonsense. The moment you start believing you're more important than your creative partner because you are the one that's paying, you've already lost the opportunity to create something extraordinary. So for me, true partnership really comes from mutual respect and not this, you know, financial power dynamic hierarchy. I'll be honest with you. And I think that's what we have with Bananas. We trust each other. And that's my second sort of principle is real trust. I trust in their expertise. I trust in the role that each of us plays. I trust in the process, even when it's uncomfortable. Because I always believe that you don't hire talented creatives and then tell them what to do. That defeats the whole purpose. As a client, my job is very, very clear in my mind. My side of the bargain is to do this. Write a world-class brief. Bring genuine insights or consumer insights and cultural context. When I brief, inspire the creatives and even inspire my own marketers to make amazing work. And then I also commit to learning how to judge creative properly, not based on like opinion or personal preference, but on genuine meaning and brand truth. And then when I give feedback with genuine direction and interest in the work, not my ego. That's my job. I've not paid millions and millions to my creative agency to tell them what to do. So recognizing your role, recognizing the agency's role has really helped our relationship, especially with Bananas, to create this space where we can create real magic. And when I do my part of the bargain, which is, you know, writing briefs, consumer insight, like doing my work well, then I have to step back. Genuinely, let the agency do what they do best and give them the space to actually surprise you. Like, really, come with me with ideas that scare me, that surprise me. And that's how we've built our relationship with Bananas, because it was new, it was untested. But, you know, I know Saf, and I said, look, I trust your talent. Now let's just find the magic together. And when trust is that starting point, everything else, quality, ideas, magic naturally follows. And then I think the third piece is with Bananas especially is just having fun. The creative process is tough. You know, I personally have sat through brainstorms, you know, on the creative side. And man, it's hard. It's really, really hard. You know, it's exhausting. Creatives become vulnerable. Creatives become emotional because maybe they're not able to crack the idea, or maybe they're not able to leave the office because, you know, they take that brief, that challenge with them in the car on the way home. They have the idea and the brief in the shower, at dinner with their families, in their dreams. You know, they're deeply thinking. And honestly, I believe sometimes, actually a lot of the times, creatives care more deeply about our brand than we do. So if they are these human beings who really care about the brand, the least I can do as a client is to make the process enjoyable. So be kind in my feedback. Acknowledge the craft. Acknowledge the fact that this guy or this girl has been thinking about my brand for a long, long time since we briefed them. Recognize those hours that they've invested, and then use humor, use lightness, use humanity to break the tension in the room. And just, I'm not going to swear. I'm not allowed to swear on this, but just don't be that guy. You know, don't be that guy. If you want world class work, you need a world class relationship. And I think that's what we have with Bananas. Actually, not I think, I know. So for me personally, kindness is a strategy. Trust is a strategy. Fun is a strategy. It's all part of the way we want to work. Because that's when agencies start, they stop working with you and they start working sort of, you know, they start playing with you. They start playing. When agencies play with you, man, it is fun. Like every single part of the day. And I must tell you, like I as a marketer, I have other parts. You know, I have other things to do. Creative is supposed to be the fun part of the job. And when that is fun, man, it gives me energy to do other parts. So I'd say that's the nature of our relationship with Bananas. I feel very passionately about it because it's a new relationship. But we've gone and won the World Cup already. It's amazing. Like, it feels like that. Yeah? And how do we continue that going forward? And that, for me, starts with really appreciating one another as human beings. And then knowing what my role is, knowing what their role is, and then just having fun along the way. Yeah.
So without, hopping on this point a lot, but you've obviously had a strong run at Cannes, at Lurie's as well, which is another platform that you've won a lot at, and other platforms. But in my research, you've always been clear that metrics and trophies, yeah, they matter, but they shouldn't be the measure of the work. Why is it important for marketers to define how they measure creative success?
I think, look, I'll answer that question by tackling, I suppose, the elephant in the room is that, and the elephant is in the room because maybe that's one that marketers maybe dance around sometimes, but some don't. David Ogilvy, I think, clearly said that if it doesn't sell, what did it sell or else? I think that was the line. And that principle has always been the bedrock. I mean, sales growth is probably the most honest measure of creative success. It truly is. Because whatever we do, if it doesn't grow sales, it doesn't grow profit. If it doesn't grow profit, nothing else happens. No innovation, no investment, no people recruitment, no purpose, no nothing. The entire system relies on growth. So when I evaluate work or when I evaluate creativity, I always start with one question, and that is, will this work grow the business? If the work doesn't grow the business, everything else is just it's a philosophy. It's not going to do anything, right? So that's the first layer. I must say that I'm not saying that I'm sitting in a creative revert and saying, oh, is this going to grow sales? Yes. No. Okay. Dead. No. Not at all. It's only the first layer. The work has to really, really shift the brand. And then, you start looking at metrics, closer metrics. I mean, metrics like, brand penetration. Are people more entering the brand? Are we attracting new users? Are we regaining lapsed users? Because especially in QSR, penetration is the lifeblood. And our creative work should always expand the base. We should be getting more people in. And then is the brand, building stronger emotional bonds? Are we strengthening affinity, trust, relevance, belonging, all those things? Because top line growth with a weak brand is short term. But growth, because people feel more connected to you, is long term value creation. And I think that's where the real power is. And then ultimately, is the work really serving our purpose? Like, are we actually doing work that means something meaningful or real for real people? Is it making the brand a positive force in culture, in society? Is it lifting communities? And I think when you have that, the combination where the creativity hits growth, emotion, and purpose, then when you're creating something really sort of meaningful and long-term, awards, you mentioned them. I think awards are fantastic. They're wonderful. We celebrate them. They recognize brave teams. But for me personally, they are never the reason. If it moves the people, if it moves my business, then it's great creative work.
I get that. And I think, that makes all the difference in a brand. There's something else that you mentioned a bit earlier on, and I wanted to just go back to this idea. You mentioned that sometimes ideas don't land, that sometimes despite all the best intentions that you might have, sometimes things just don't work, and you want to firstly be forgiven by the people you serve, by the customers you serve, and by the team that you work with. How do you earn that? How do you get to that point? How do you ensure that you reach that point where you've earned the right to be forgiven, and also you've earned the right to sometimes be at a point where ideas just don't land and it's fine?
I think internally, you have to have the mindset that failure is fertile ground. Really is. Because internally, if you're scared to take risks, then naturally, you know, you're not gonna be doing anything that's boundary pushing, and you're gonna end up making work that's safe. So I think that's the first thing, that failure is truly fertile ground, because it allows you to think about what it is that really made you not relevant. You're going to ask yourself some really deep questions, and you're going to do things that you're not going to get right. So that, I think that's firstly. And then in terms of earning the right to make failures along the way, especially with consumers, you've got to play in culture, and you've got to be willing to sort of just apologize in a way that actually resonates with people. I'll give you a very good example, and it's an example I often use when Meg, who used to be the CMO for KFC UK, when KFC in the UK ran out of chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken had no chicken. There was a supply chain issue. And people were upset and they were angry and everything. And Meg had the genius idea of developing a print ad, because there was nothing you could do. We genuinely did not have chicken. We had a supply chain situation. And what do you do? Like, you can't do anything. And she came out, and her team, of course, came out with this ad, which basically, if you look at, I mean, our bucket, it says KFC. They just changed it to FCK. And they had an apology. And they had an apology at the bottom, right? But I think it was so raw. It was so raw. It was so vulnerable that people instantly forgave the brand. Instantly. It was just so real. And for me, it was a masterclass in how you genuinely can take risks. I mean, it was a risk, right? I mean, putting a swear word on our brand, that is, but it was in context of giving an apology. And I think you earn the right to then make more mistakes when you appear vulnerable, when you're so raw, and you actually show people that you are just another brand. So I think that for me was a really powerful lesson, is that when you listen to people, when you really show up in society, willing to play and be vulnerable, you'll be surprised at how people actually want to engage with you.
Sohail, thanks so much for all of these insights and all the work that you've done up to this point. And congratulations to you and your team, I suppose, on getting the culture, understanding the culture, immersing yourself so much in it that you are able to, create work that resonates so much and so deeply. We usually have a question on the show where we ask our previous guest to pass the mic to our next guest. And one of our previous guests was Arpan Sood, the CMO of the Sub-Saharan Africa Business Unit at Mondelez. And the question that he left was, what do you think marketing will be in 5 years' time, and how different do you believe it'll be in comparison to how it is today?
Wow. Thanks, Arpan. I'd say that I think it will be very different and not different at the same time. And the reason why I say very different and not different at the same time is I think how we go to market, how we actually develop the work will be fundamentally different. We've seen that, right? I mean, I don't need to talk about the impact of AI. Our world is fundamentally going to be different. The way we do work, the way we receive brand messaging, all of those good things. But the reason why it's not going to change is also because at the end of the day, we are still all human beings. And our behavior as human beings is not fundamentally going to change. I really, really, truly believe that. That, you know, there's a lot of conversation around Gen Z, Gen A, and, you know, we treat them like they're not human. They're like different, but actually they're just human beings. They're just in a different environment. So, and my view is that I think the way we develop work in the industry, especially in marketing, is still going to have to be consumer-based, insight-based, rooted in culture. Those are the brands that are going to win in 5 years' time. Those are the brands that are winning today. The brands that are, you know, truly rooted in culture, know who they are, have very clear problems to solve, work with agencies that understand exactly what they want and what they need to do for their clients, and then developing work that is going to be relevant in those times. That is not going to change. How we develop the work, how we actually show up, that, yeah, for sure, AI is going to play a massive role. So that's my answer. I really believe that it's going to change fundamentally, but not going to change fundamentally at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So, Hale, now it's your turn to leave a question. So what question would you like to leave for our next guest about their thoughts on marketing, advertising, the creative industry, or even their creative process?
I have to think of a really tough question. I'd like to touch on this concept of time. We spoke about it earlier. You know, as marketers, I genuinely often believe that we don't realize it, but we'd like to think we have time, but actually we don't have much time. So I would say, you know, to the next person handing the mic over, what's your biggest fear when it comes to how you're going to use the next 5 years of your life?
The biggest fear about how you're going to use the next 5 years of your life.
Yeah, the biggest fear.
So, yeah. Hale, thanks so much for making time. It was an absolutely amazing conversation. I'm sure our viewers and listeners will get a lot out of this.
Thank you so much, Mugezi. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mugezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mugezi.com.